Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
You exploded out of that gate there.
I know I had to get there at some point. You say hi.
Hi.
Good. And Adam Cleary.
I got a bit of a fright, but also hi.
Yeah, just to make sure we're all awake, considering that we're the oldest people in the office who still like Final Fantasy VII, unlike most of the world, apparently. But I guess we'll find out based on the response to this. So yeah, we all played the Final Fantasy VII remake. Me and Cleary were lucky enough, thanks to Square Enix, to play about 3.5 hours-ish down in London. Jules, you played at EGX.
I did, yes.
You played the chunk that is now available as the free demo.
Yes.
The big old reactor thingy from the very beginning. So yeah, we're going to talk about all things related to the remake. I'm going to open the floor by just saying, where are you guys on it now? Have you come down from the rush of playing it, or are you just kind of, I don't know, taking it all in?
Well, this is the thing. I went through this sort of like real ringer when it was first announced, because obviously it was the game that for the longest time was never going to happen. Do you remember that tech demo that released when the PS3 came out?
Yeah.
And everyone was there like, oh, this is amazing. And then it's like, it's just tech demo. It's like, well, why tease us like this? So for years and years and years, you've almost believed it to be the holy grail that should never come true. When it finally was announced, and then they snuck in the caveat of it's also episodic, people were like, what is this game? I think people are really unsure of it because it's like, it's a solid property.
I've got to be honest, right? When they announced it, it was like, it's going to be episodic, it's not coming out for 4 years or something. I didn't want them to do it in the first place. I was like, this news, I'm a huge, like, it's the game that made me fall in love with gaming, Final Fantasy VII. And I was still like, I could not think of any worse news than this. You're going to spend 5 years doing it. Nobody wants it. You're going to get it wrong. It's going to be years and years and years and years. And I said to Scott, when we left that play session in London, I went, I'm not happy and I'm not excited and anything. I'm just so relieved because I know I'll buy this game and I know that it's going to be a proper remake, and that's still where I am.
Yeah,
the demo's come out today. I'm not going to rush home and download the demo. I know you are, but it's stuff I've already played, and I said to you before, by the time the game actually comes out, I don't want to have done the first reactor three times.
It's an hour long as well, the demo.
Yeah,
so it's like the whole thing. Yeah. I mentioned our ages and the general sort of interest levels at the start, because it's weird looking at the coverage. Obviously the embargo was Monday morning, 9 a.m. Monday morning. And the amount of response online, looking at the likes of IGN, the likes of Outside Xbox, and our own video, it's just strange. I thought that the numbers seemed supremely small.
Well,
and then the more I've tweeted about it, the more I just kind of, I don't know if it's an age divide, like a demographic.
It might
thing.
Not be that. It might be because of the fact that, again, you've got, as we were all just discussing, there's that element of, do people want this remake? Are they going to, are they worried that it's going to be handled poorly? But also, we have to remember, unfortunately for Square Enix, a massive portion of the game leaked earlier on, because originally we were meant to go to LA to play this.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously, there was a big cancellation with that, and it was a case of like, people saw so much of that that maybe the hype bubble burst was straight away, because you're meant to drip feed it and get it out. When you were just presented with, here's 3 hours full of cutscenes and then nearly the entire story, people were like, well, that's that game then.
I tell you what, it stands out to me that I wonder, because obviously, like, right now it's like, you know, like me, Jules, I don't know, we've all played Final Fantasy VII, we grew up on it, it's amazing, yada yada. Benji's also a huge fan, and outside of that, nobody else has played it. We managed to convince Zoe to play it, Josh, Ash, they're not bothered. I don't know, I just, like, if you didn't grow up with it, it just doesn't seem appealing to go back to.
I think it's a huge, like, if you convince somebody, oh, here's a game from before you were born or before you liked gaming, you should play it. Now, normally, like, that's Sonic or one of the Super Mario Brothers games. Like, okay, you can pick that up for an hour or two. Oh, I've enjoyed this bit of nostalgia. I understand it better. But to ask somebody to sink the near on 100 hours in to properly enjoy the story on a, you know, a really old-fashioned battle system, like, it's literally one step above, like, Pokemon on the Game Boy, like, the way the battle system works.
It's also blocky as hell.
I love that battle system.
Yeah,
I remember when it came out, and I couldn't believe how good it looked.
Yeah.
And then I remember when 8 came out, and there was this clamor to remake it with 8's graphics. And
yeah,
like, oh, what a step up. They'll have legs. It's going to be amazing. They'll have joints that move on their arms.
Yeah. But either way, I mean, that kind of all contributes to the fact that we were enamored by it at the time. And I think that it was this massive technical thing at the time. And we'll get into how I think that they've kind of changed the approach in the modern, the modern day.
I was just going to say that it might be comparable to Shenmue 3 because of the fact that when that series was out, everyone was like, this is revolutionary. This is fantastic. Yeah. And then when the hype for the third installment came out, there was people literally rising out of their seats screaming in excitement. And yet the game still sold really poorly.
Like, yeah.
It's one of those things where there's always a swell and you'll have a cult following of people going like, this game is amazing, but will you put your money where your mouth is? Mm-hmm. Maybe not.
Maybe at launch. So yeah, I was going to say, like, we were enamored with it back when it first came out. And obviously there's the whole bit when you, I'm not going to do necessarily spoilers, but there's that one bit where you leave the first city, when you leave Midgar and you realize that actually that's only the first sort of sixth or whatever of the whole game. And oh my God, there's a whole world map and everything else. Now the remake obviously splits that so that the whole first part is just Midgar, and then everything else is going to come at some point.
It makes sense, that.
No, exactly. So that's what I was going to say. Do you think that, because back in the day, obviously that was a big revelation that, oh man, there's so much more to this game. Mm. Do you think the only way they can replicate that feeling is to kind of hide, quote unquote, the fact that this isn't the full game now, and then release so much more?
They never hid it. They said from the off, this is going to be episodic. If you, and like everyone was, oh, I can't believe that they're going to do this. It's like, there is so much of this game's story to tell that... I can understand why they did.
Well, I wouldn't say that they did.
I'm not justifying that they should be charging them as full price titles for each one. I feel like
which is what they'll totally do.
I feel like that is possibly asking a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people online saying like, "Oh, I'll just wait until the Game of the Year version comes out." And I'm just like, that mentality needs to stop, because if you don't support it, then I don't know. Like
we said before, like there's going to be a console changeover. Like, the next generation of consoles is going to be out probably before even the next installment.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
So it's quite a weird. Given, I mean, you said Christmas is coming out
for the PS5.
Given how long people have waited for this, the decision to go forward with it, like 9 months before the PS5 comes out, pretty much.
Wait,
it's so strange.
So they have said it's slated for a Christmas release.
We know that the Xbox is coming later this year. PS5 will be later this year. So yeah, there'll be a console change by the end of the
year. That's mad.
This
first episode is coming out on PS4 and assumedly
in April. Yeah,
it's coming out in a month.
Oh, in April. Okay,
Cool. Well, I was going to say though,
suddenly thought it slipped.
I think genuinely.
No.
You might hope, because they've said in previous interviews, the way this is going to work is so much of the work was building the environment for it and building all the tools they needed to create the story, and all they've done of the gameplay element is Midgar, and they've said, oh, it's going to be far more streamlined than the other bits, which when I read it first time just kind of seems like a bit of a, oh, it's not going to take 4 years is what we mean by that. But there is a chance, a very, 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 very small chance that when this releases in April, they go, part two is in 2 months or part two is in 3 months.
Maybe. Yeah. They did get out there.
Very small chance.
Yeah, they did get out there and address the fact that, that obviously this was delayed anyway from March 3rd to April 10th. And they said that that doesn't affect the part two development, which they have moved on to as of December last year. So yeah, I mean, but that even that is another question as to how do they then split the different parts. Just to quickly address what you were saying about them hiding it. I don't necessarily think they've hid it, because they have stated it was episodic.
Yeah, no,
they didn't really double that down,
though. But people got annoyed. The
well, because it's called the Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's not called Part 1 or Episode 1 or anything
like
that.
I think I've said to Scott, you've kind of got to be the kind of person who really keeps up with news and insider stuff to know, to really be aware this is a remake. Because you're right, they've said it. Certainly, there's no accusation that they have attempted to hide this. They've been upfront with it, but they've been upfront with it when asked about it. And they've been upfront with it when they released it. It's not called the Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1, which they could have done and got around this very easily.
And when we were at the press event, they referred to it as the Final Fantasy VII Remake Project.
Yeah.
But they don't refer to it to us.
It's not going to be on the side of a bus or anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why, like that kind of, like I said, like I put a little Twitter poll out and it's like about 500-ish replies so far, and one third of that of those people didn't know it was more than one part.
I think that's going to be a bit of a thing, because I saw a lot of people actually replying to that being like, wait, sorry, what?
I know.
Like the way around this, what they needed to do at the start was be like, right, the Final Fantasy VII Remake is coming out in, was originally March. Yeah. Part 2 was, if they just laid out the release date, Part 2, this is Midgar, Part 2 will be out then, blah, blah, blah. It will be priced at that, it's priced like that. And I think the reason they've been probably very unforthcoming on the details for this is because they don't know.
Yeah,
I would imagine. The PR solution to this is to lay it all out and go, look, this is what we're doing. It's a remake project. There's going to be multiple versions of the game. You can play it from March. Then in July, you can play Part 2, September, blah, blah, blah. And the plan is, we might push some of this back, but this is roughly the schedule going to be. So by a year's time, you'll have the whole game. That's first one's going to be priced at £50, and then all the subsequent ones will be 10, 15, 20, whatever. If they'd laid it all out, there'd be no problems. And I do genuinely worry, because there will be a percentage of people who buy this game, however small it is, who get to the end of this game and do not believe that the game is finished. Yeah. They'll be like, wait, well, yeah. Sorry?
Where's the rest of it, yeah.
But that, I mean, that lines up with what we all felt back in the day, because obviously that was just a case of they held back their, they played their full hand after you got to Midgar. And I'd wonder about that, because they've talked about this, the thing that we're getting in April, whatever you want to call it, part one or whatever, they've said is a full Final Fantasy game, and they've said it's going to be about 30 to 40 hours long. And so assumedly there has to be some sort of finale to that as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, I guess we can talk about that. How do you think they're going to wrap this without leaving it on a massive cliffhanger, because they've put that picture out there of the whole gang standing on the highway looking out, which is how it should
end. Weird when you think about it, because I can't remember many video games that have released with literally there was a billboard outside the venue of what should be the final shot of the game,
pretty much.
Well, they could obviously, the when the plate drops, that's near the end of your time in Midgar before you head out.
About halfway.
If they're going to condense the story, as in, and maybe rejig a few things to make it work, it may well be that the plate dropping is the most emotional hit.
I think that's what leads to Storm in the Tower.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I would imagine
you then go up and then...
There's the picture of the highway. We know they're going
to
be...
When does Ultima Weapons come into it? Because that destroys... because they go back to Midgar and destroy that.
Going back to Midgar in disc... We should have an entire other podcast. We were just talking about going back to Midgar in disc 3 and taking the little detours and getting back into like Sector 5 and stuff.
Yeah.
That was one of my favourite things about the game. But
Well, and they've showed cutscenes from that, because they've shown Wedge or whatever. What do you call the dude who's not Wedge and Biggs. Not Jesse Biggs?
Yeah.
Biggs with a parachute. So they're working on the cutscenes for that. And I wonder if that means that they can reuse some assets from building Midgar to flesh out different side streets and whatever else for that part of it. Maybe it's just easier going forward and there's not be that much time between them. But in terms of how do you end this first chunk, like I said to you before, I think they'll make you fight Sephiroth, because they've already rejigged the story so much. You can check out me and Adam's videos that are on the What Culture Gaming channel, where we break down the different changes in the story and stuff, because they've completely reframed how Sephiroth works in the game now.
When do you get your first big reveal of
Big Seth?
Going back to Cloud's memory.
I put this in ups and downs. One of the negatives for me, I get a lot, there's a lot of story changes in it. Scott, you've got a video coming up with like all the major changes.
Yes, it should be online by the time.
There's a lot of story changes, and it's the one thing I was very precious over. I was like, oh, I don't want to change that. I don't want to change that. But playing through it with the little tweaks here and there, you still go from like point A to point B to point C, but maybe the way you get there or even why you get there has been changed to make more sense narratively. I like all the changes they've done, because I think it is quite a brave thing to go into the story and go, right, we're not changing it, but that didn't make a lot of sense, and that could be tightened up. And look, if tweaked it that way.
One of the points that Lakiri's getting at, which we talked about loads, is that because they've reframed Sephiroth, because they introduce him inside Cloud's head when he's walking through Midgar right at the beginning, they get away from one, for me, was one of the best moments in gaming history, which is when you come across Sephiroth in the gameplay flashback, where you play alongside him and he slays that dragon and does 3,000 points of damage.
Yeah, when he's in your party and you're just like, can my guys get this strong?
Yeah,
and then you're just kind of like, oh my
god.
So
they've completely ditched. Well, then, I don't know if they've ditched that,
Quake 3?
That's not his debut anymore, because that used to be, that was such a, like, they had such a build-up. They had the swords sticking out the back of the president's, the Shimmer president's back or whatever, and it was like they build up to this mythological superhuman soldier. Then you fight alongside him, and it was the biggest thing in the world.
For me, I think the main change they've made here is there's that bit where you get out of Midgar and you realise, oh, there is a whole extra world to this, and it comes literally only about, you know, it's one motorbike chase away from you discovering that this isn't a game about a small group of freedom fighters fighting a giant corporation, which is how it feels at the start.
Totally.
You think, somehow I've got me and this ragtag group, we've got to somehow take on this global corporation, and at some point in this game, I'm going to have to knock off President Shinra and say, oh, hang on, wait, there's more to this. There's a whole bigger story at play. That's, they take that away from you, because, I mean, don't get me wrong, I get it, because otherwise they're going to release a game of a remake of a game, which... in which the villain of the actual game will
but
not
be it was,
feature.
It was yeah. on them yeah. to split it the way that they have. Like, they, you know, they could have, they don't have to do it this way. They don't have to make Midgar the end of it. Yeah. It's just, it's strange. And again, like, what do you guys think they'll end on that'll be their way to, how the hell do you make Midgar satisfying?
I just think it's literally, it's that bike chase is the last thing. You'll end up having that boss battle on the top of the motorway, and it'll be like, right, well, there's a whole other world out there. I mean, let's get on it, guys. Well, to be continued.
If they're going to end it in a sort of like classic movie way, it will happen with some accident or something will knock Cloud out, and in his final moments, that's when he'll have the flashback of Sephiroth in the flames,
and then
him turning away, and then it goes to be continued.
I've just remembered one of the very quick shots that they put in many of the trailers is Sephiroth on that motorway, on that highway.
No, it's not. Is it?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, there you go then.
Either you fight him or he taunts you one last time or whatever. Maybe only Cloud can see him or something. Mm. But they need to do something. The thing is, I think they'll stay away from doing like a full on cliffhanger. I think it'll be like, oh, what's next? They need some, because who knows how many months or maybe years we're going to wait.
It was an unfinished motorway as well, not a cliff. So.
a motorway hanger.
The interesting thing is they have to end it in such a way that allows you to come back and do replayability, because this is one of the big questions that I had, where Final Fantasy games, known for their side quests, known for having different routes and methods of getting through stuff. If you get to the end and it basically Fallout 3s you before the DLC, where it goes, that's the end, reload your old save, and you can't go back into a Midgar at all, then I think that a lot of people will be pretty pissed.
It's a really tough thing to balance, because like, yeah, they want replayability, you want side quests, and we know that they have like quest boards and more side characters to get quests from, but if you're replaying it over and over again, which save then carries forward into part two? Like, is it, I mean, how the hell do you even attempt to balance that stuff? But I mean,
my honest hope for this, and I think purely from a PR perspective, from a marketing perspective, it is fatal to the long-term prospects of people buying multiple versions of the game if they don't do this. Mm-hmm. When this releases in April, if the release date for the next part isn't released with it, they've got serious problems.
Well, it stings of a kind of lack of confidence in it. It's like, this IP is should be gold dust. Like, it's a license to print money. You look at how popular it still is in the current like society, toys, t-shirts, like the One-Winged Angel, like Kenny Omega, our boy, like he's a big fan. So they should learn from what Square Enix did with the Hitman series. They released episodic levels there, but they always showed you what they were working on next, kept you in the loop so that there was actual incentive to do it.
Well, that's
then they ushered
whole,
in the season
like
pass, which was like, buy it here for a discounted price. Mm-hmm. Like, it's,
I think that'll get around any possible backlash they get from, as we say, whatever percentage of people still don't realize it's episodic, or who even play the game without realizing where it's going to end.
Yeah.
If when you literally buy that game, it's like, all right, part two's coming three months, four months, a year, however long it is, people will be like, oh, so I'm only playing, okay, well, I'm not going to rush this then. I'll do all the side quests, I'll get the most out of it, and it'll probably soften the edges a bit from whatever negativity there is.
How many parts do you think they'll end up with in total? Do you think they'll make it a trilogy?
I've got a full prediction for you. You remember I initially said 3, 1 per disc. I've changed my mind on that, and it'd be 5.
Okay, why 5?
I just think that fits slightly better. Mm. I think you do Midgar as the first one. I think you do pretty much exploring the rest of that continent. Mm-hmm. So pretty much up to where you go over the sea from Costa del Sol, and you go to, I think the third one will be, so basically you go up to Junnan. I think the third one will be Gold Saucer, Temple of the Ancients and all that, basically back to Nibelheim.
Yeah.
And then Northern Crater stuff. Yeah. And then.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think considering how much in the other bits that we played down at the press event, the amount that they fleshed out Wutai, which comes across from what they did in Crisis Core, like there's way more about Wutai and the battle between Wutai and Midgar and okay. Shinra. Shinra is like a place in that. I think they'll do way more with Wutai in general.
I agree, just
flesh that whole city out because it should be more important.
I remember saying to you, like the way it is in the story, and again, the way they followed it up with some of the other games, you think that Wutai is this like huge place and stuff. When you go and it's just nothing. It's six buildings.
Yeah, exactly.
It's six buildings and something carved into a mountain. Yeah. It's like, hang on, what army? Where were they in this?
But I also get worried on the flip side because I don't know about you, but I'm worried that certain areas are going to be completely like almost nerfed because I want to go and experience like Yuffie's village. Mm-hmm. I want to go see that a bit more. I really want Fort Condor to be a major part because that mini game is still great.
Oh God, it's not.
Fort Condor mini game is good.
It's fine.
Anyone who's basically just like, oh, tower defense games are dead.
You think they'll keep the submarine thing where you're firing the missiles?
I love that.
Submarine game's good. Yeah. The bike and the snowboard are one of the best too, by the way.
Yes, the
snowboard mini game's one of the best mini games in any video game.
I think I read somewhere that the snowboarding mini game inspired them to make Cool Borders, which is or somebody else, which is why you've got the Resident Evil 2 policeman as one of the unlockable characters. It's so weird.
I hope that they do, considering that the special edition of this current remake part thing comes with a version of Cloud with his bike. I hope they do a version where Cloud's got his snowboard. Otherwise, what's the point in splitting it?
The thing is, though, do you reckon you use it as a weapon?
Yeah, stupidly, you can get a baseball bat.
There was a lot of things which never really made sense with Final Fantasy VII.
But kind of just
went along with because of the daft, blocky graphics. Yeah. They've already got around the whole, right, we're going to have to dress Cloud up as a woman to get him into this. The way they presented the character, it was too serious, too straight. You probably never would have gone for it. But obviously, the way they've done it, you can clearly see that they've thought about that. Mm-hmm. I don't get how this guy snowboards, though. I don't get how he snowboards.
They're only going to make him more and more quirky as it goes on. I mean, even the interaction, the first talk he has with Aerith, she completely breaks him down and just like he has this really stoic exterior and she's like, yeah, whatever, have a flower.
The first is like, so?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm involved in dangerous things, so?
Yeah, I've put some flowers.
To be honest, they needed to do that.
Because I
enjoy Cloud as a protagonist, but he's kind of a bit of a buzzkill
He's a cliche now. He wasn't at the time. Mm-hmm. But again, part of how successful the character was, that basically just became the ancillary lone wolf trope of a hero.
But I love that, though.
They took that to the nth degree with Squall.
I was going to say, Squall's so much
wrong. Such an emo, man.
For me, I think, Cloud totally works in the modern day, too, because you take those old school, especially anime-style hero tropes, and you completely invert them by going, like, no, he is this quirky, let's mosey, charming guy underneath, and he thinks he has to be this over the top soldier, this like emotionless soldier. I think there's way more you can do with that.
Isn't it funny though that especially in anime, your heroes are so much more relatable now because they realize that superheroes and personable,
like One Punch Man,
My Hero Academia and stuff like that, they always have flaws.
Yeah,
and like in the beginning of the games, it's just like, I'm just really good at doing this, I can't show any emotion, I'm just amazing.
Look at my big sword,
yeah.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think them character-wise, there's a lot to do. I mean, I was going to mention the demo, actually, because the demo's out today. You can go play it on PS4. That demo, I think I said before, is like an hour long. Mm-hmm. So, like, how long, basically, do you think the full version of this is going to be if the demo they're comfortable releasing is already an hour long?
The whole Midgar chunk, the whole thing they're putting out in April. They said 30, 40 hours, didn't they?
Assumedly, interestingly,
they did the same with Final Fantasy XV, do you remember? Mm. They released that one, which was like you
dream
going into the dream.
Episode Carbuncle,
that was the opening thing.
But they did that as a kind of they might be referencing that by releasing this hour-long demo because it's basically just like, look, that you remember how big Final Fantasy XV was, so therefore you should be making the same associations with this.
True. Let's talk a little bit about dialogue and gameplay and stuff because where do you guys come down on the dialogue? Because I know
I thought the dialogue was quite bad.
This
is the thing, actually.
I
sort of came back on it a bit. I thought, do you know what, looking at it in its own terms and judging it purely off its own terms and probably actually the general context of how Final Fantasy games tend
to be. It's anime ass.
Yeah.
BS.
It's not good. And I think it's just the problem with that is in recent years, the bar has gone up to Red Dead levels. It's gone to Horizon levels. It's gone to Last of Us levels. You expect very natural, very believable sort of dialogue in video games because the medium is more than the equal of every other film, television, things like that. And playing this, it was like right back to like,
really,
it's not Resident Evil levels, but it's like Street Fighter. Like, oh, I'm gonna get the planet. I know you can hear the planet dying.
Cloudy. For me, it's just I put it on all of that under an umbrella of anime. I put it with Persona. Yeah, I put it with Dragon Ball. Like, you know,
I said in ups and downs. I doubt it's gonna ruin anybody's enjoyment, and most people will probably like it. But for me, there's a bar which the game has reached graphically, gameplay. It's hit everything. Mm-hmm. It's like comparable to any other game. But it has got like early noughties when, bad dialogue.
Okay. The thing is, I think they're aware of it in many ways. Like the bit that I picked up on when I went, oh, that's a bit cringy, is the first time Barrett gets really animated. It's that bit where he points at Cloud and he says, oh, the planet's crying.
I know you can hear the planet dying, fool.
Yeah, and it's like one step away from dropping a fool in. And I noticed that and I was like, oh man, that's like, that is the Mr. T stereotype that you designed him to be in 1997. But there's a bit in the second reactor where Barrett starts being animated, then he stops and he clenches his fist and they zoom in on him kind of calming himself down.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, you're kind of making that a character trope. And I kind of wonder if they'll do more stuff with that and Dine and him and Marlene.
This is the thing. That might be the one thing from my review I want to change, that once I've got my hands on the full game, because there's even little bits in the demo where they're broadcasting the footage of them in this reactor to basically like incriminate them. Mm-hmm. Right? And Barrett goes, oh, I've got it. And he turns around, he goes to the security camera and he starts giving this lecture about Shimmer's the enemy, they're using the planet, blah, blah, blah. And he does this whole thing. Couch goes, I bet you 1,000 gil the microphones are turned off. And it's just like, oh, they're going to lean into it. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, because he does that at the start, that when he says, I know you can. And then like Cloud's just like, you hear that? Like, really? And he's just like, you should get help.
You should
like,
get help. You need
yeah, they sort of like...
I didn't get to play any of that because when I was doing the EGX demo, it was literally just like, they drop you in at the end of the Mako reactor, you have the boss battle, and then...
On the new PS4 demo, all that's in there. You can get that dialogue.
That's cool.
One thing I think is worth mentioning is how hard it is.
Yes,
because
totally.
That battle you talk about, I had a quick look around the room and there was a lot of people, most of them
far ahead.
Seasoned video game journalist getting handed a game over screen from that battle. I was like,
good.
I have tried to introduce people to Final Fantasy VII, not like over the years, you should play this. Mm-hmm. And you get as far as that boss battle, and they're like, that's so easy, it's so boring. It's like, oh, don't attack because his tail's up. And they're like, just sit there, let the timer run out, his tail goes down, hit him with bolt, and they're like, that's it. That's not challenging. It's bad. And now, genuinely, that with the Airbuster battle was really hard.
That was the one time I died.
It's like when the debris is falling, creating the little like makeshift things. Yes. Then you've got to like move around it. It's there sweeping you away. And I'm just like, okay, I'm actually like gonna have to heal now.
I think that the boss battles made me realize that I love the combat anyway. But the thing that I think they nail is that split between old school turn based stuff and the new age Devil May Cry full on platinum game style, just wade in kind of thing. And you do need to hop between the two. It's like attack loads, then pause, heal, do something else. You're playing in both mentalities, and
did
I absolutely
love
that.
Did you guys play with the fully? Because they said that there's a series of modes.
There's two modes, and our one regret, we both left, was like, did you ever go on
the classic
mode? Yeah. Like, no, I didn't switch.
I don't know if that's in the demo yet, because we're at work, obviously, right now, and we're recording this. We haven't been home to try, but
I
don't know if classic mode's in there, because that was in the build that we had at the event. They said, use it if you want. Everyone went with the new one, because it's the remake.
Well, yeah, because
I have no idea how classic mode works. Even though they've described it, I don't know Final Fantasy 15 had that mode as well, but all that meant was that it just freezes time, the camera angle's the same.
Yeah, I think basically the way it was described, and again we'll probably have a go on later on, but the way it was described to me was that basically the moving around and hacking away is all automated, and you're just sitting there waiting for the gauge to go up and flicking through
which
the command
menus. That's very like Final Fantasy 12, which like
that one really, I didn't get to grips with that.
I think if they're going to do classic mode, they need to zoom the camera out, put it on the side, and just lock you've got the character models, you've got the animations, just lock everybody in and just make it play like a reskinned version of the 1997 one.
I wouldn't mind if it just meant that like you were flat pausing time every time you were making a decision. I'm okay with that, but I just don't want them acting without me telling them to act. I feel that's the whole point of those sort of menu systems, just being like, no, I want something to chain.
I want more control over this.
I think they do a good job of incentivizing you to use the new stuff. But for me, it was...
I really like the new system.
I love it. For me, it's the thing that they've tried to get right ever since the first Kingdom Hearts. I mentioned that in the video, is that I remember playing the first Kingdom Hearts, having the menus on screen, trying to button up and down the menu while I'm running around, and it just didn't work. And then 12 got close to it, but then it was lots of automated stuff, lots of gambits, you're like programming AI
gambits on 12,
and it like didn't feel right. And then this one, it's like, no, you can do light heavy special modes and whatever, but you can also pause and kind of plan stuff tactically. For me, it is like the best like balance of the two. What else stood out to you guys in terms of, was it just like for graphics for me or another
stunning,
massive thing?
Right, absolutely. I said in my review, I think this might go down in a lot of people's minds as visually where this generation of consoles has peaked.
Ooh,
I think
Last of Us 2.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's going to be out on this one. Mm-hmm. I just think for the amount of different things it does, the depth it gives of stuff. Like you said, there was a bit where you're just literally walking across the street and you just sort of catch how far away through Midgar you can see. Okay. And it's believable that it's all there. It's not corridor, but you are following a fairly linear path. Like mm-hmm. your brain's like, I could go all the way over there if I wait for the train or something like that. Like, yeah. And I remember when I first played it, it was the sense of like feeling Midgar being alive and being that big. And yeah, I'm going to go over here and do this thing. Yeah. But conceivably, I buy that there is a whole world working around this. And it's harder to do that now mm-hmm. because you've played games in which these worlds exist and you've played them where they are that big. And to still get that feeling now from a game of like, oh my God, this is a huge, living, breathing city, mm-hmm. it's 10 times harder. Mm. It was amazing when Final Fantasy VII did it because it was the first time I'd ever experienced mm-hmm. that. It was easy for them to do because it was new. Now it's you're used to it. You're almost numb to scaling games. And still I walked in, I thought, it's big. I buy the bigness of it.
That's the thing, that when they start rolling out the trailer for what will be like the part two, do they just load it up with like the tiny Bronco and you've got that weird little red cart thing you get from the dude from the Golden Saucer?
Oh, yeah.
The buggy. Like, so you just sort of like, you do all that and you go, okay, this is the open world component. And it, like you said, it's hard to wow people with something that they've obviously become accustomed to.
Well, this is the thing. I don't know if you can do open world after this. I don't know if you can be walking around in a big giant field that spans the size of a continent in this. Hmm. And you certainly aren't going to have an enlarged version of Cloud walking around the map.
That's one of the things, because it's like, how the hell do they do a world map?
They'll just do Final Fantasy 15. Like, it'll be that sort of similar thing.
Way smaller, though. It wouldn't be a world map anymore.
No, but then again,
I don't think it'll be a world map. I think it'll be
large levels sort of thing.
Yeah, large bits where you sort of end up.
I still think they'll somehow stylize it. I don't think they'll go on like the chibi route or anything, but I think they'll do something where it's zoomed out and it's like an approximation of the world.
The way I would personally do it with this, because you don't want to break things, but the world map breaks realism, right? And I know it's literally a character with square blocky arms and everything, but you're bought into that, right?
Oh, yeah,
having a giant version. But remember, when Weapon walks towards Midgar, you are a third the size of Weapon. Looked stupid. You are bigger than the High Wind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
it's stupid, right? I think it'll literally just be, they'll lay out a series of set pieces and other areas, some of which will feel like they're in a big world map, others which will be in Calm Town, will be in Costa del Sol, they'll be in the Golden Saucer. I don't think you're going to get to wander around aimlessly. I think it's either going to be forwards to the next part of the story or backwards.
I worry that there won't be any sort of like open world freedom like that at all, and it'll be literally like a level selection. You'll just be like, you'll have like a GPS and it'll just be like, I want to go here.
Oh, I'm on the opposite side to you guys. I
want them to have it. Yeah. I'm just saying that.
15 had a car.
It did. And that was great.
It was very much bolted to the road, though.
Yeah, I think it could be something similar to that. You'll see a lot of the open world. You'll not be able to just wander around a big circle.
My shout is totally a stylized, zoomed out thing, because when they did Traveling Between Planets and Kingdom Hearts, when you get the gummy ship, it's not realistic proportions.
Are you defending the gummy ship sections?
Yeah, sure.
Oh my God, they were
bad. They're all right. Little arcadey shooting
like
stuff.
Kingdom Hearts 1, when they first...
No, 3.
But I'm just saying, Kingdom Hearts 1, when I first played that, I was like, okay, I can just about get over the fact. So at that time when it released, I was very much a teenager that was like Disney in my Final Fantasy game.
No, I'm
having a little tiny blocky ship. I'm like, what am I playing? What is
it's
this?
It's a gummy
game?
Ship, Jules. I'm only making a comparison in terms of they've done that before, where they haven't gone, okay, we don't need to worry about realistic proportions. Just assume that your entire crew is in this little sphere and that's the cockpit and whatever. Like, I
don't want that.
I totally want that.
I'd rather they did what they did in 15 to that. Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I think if they do 15, they'll have to shrink the world overall, but maybe that's just a way to bring all those different cities and stuff together. Yeah. One final thing which broke just before we came in, which is just something to be clarified, is that they've talked about playable characters.
Yeah.
And they said that Red 13 is not playable, quote unquote, in the remake. But that, if you look at the actual quote from, I think it's Tetsuya Nomura, said that that's just not the case, that he's not playable in this part. Because they can't do his character justice.
Where he appears in the game makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because you literally only fight with him.
It's like twice before the end of Midgar.
Yeah, obviously you meet him in Shinra Tower. He's one of the experiment things. He breaks out. It's literally as you're making your escape, you get a couple of battles in a hallway with him. He's in the lift for the boss fight. And then if you want him in your party, he's on the final one.
Yeah.
Now, realistically, I don't know how close they're going to stick to that. That is a handful of encounters. And I think if you're developing a full character, kind of a bit of a waste if you're then going to end the game at the end of the motorway.
I think that's how you will make people feel like it's a bit of a cheat with the episodic format. If you introduce them just at the very end, just as you're getting excited and then it closes out, it's better for
them
to actually
play them with that character.
Yeah, it's better to just say, okay, he will be in the next one rather than...
I will say one thing that keeps coming out from all this is a lot of decisions they keep making are disappointing. Like, doing it episodically will disappoint a lot of people.
Yeah.
Not knowing the release date, that's going to disappoint a lot of people. Having a lot of details that aren't released yet, disappoint a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Red team not being playable, disappoint a lot of people. But when you sit there and you go, right, well, they're doing it episodically so they can do it all without rushing anything. And they've not given us any firm dates because they probably just don't know when they're coming out. And we don't get to play Red 13 because if you've got to develop a whole fifth character for this, you're going to meet that date, you're obviously going to have to rush it. And I think a lot of they're going to get criticism for a lot of the decisions they've made, but I think if you just objectively take a step back from it and not come off, you know, without the entitlement of, but I want my, I want my talking dog.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think you understand everything they're doing.
Oh yeah, everything that they've put out, I think, makes perfect sense. I do see the side that they could have just waited, but I think the scale of what they're building, and I will, it makes sense to
I will
split
say
it.
As well, the important thing of that is that only counts and you only get that as a pass if the product you put out delivers in that result. And again, that's why I was so relieved when I played it, because I thought, yep, disappointed it's taking this long, disappointed they're tweaking with the story, disappointed that it's only going to be one episode, all this, but now that I've sat down, now that I've played it, fair enough. You clearly know what you're doing with this. So me, as the mere consumer in the bargain, I am just going to sit back and enjoy whatever you're putting out.
I do think
there.
As well that
if the game was bad, it'd be like, you've had all this time and I've let you away with all this other stuff and this is dog eggs. Like,
yeah, I do think that maybe like doing this sort of split release is one of the only ways you can make a modern or a newer populace, newcomers and everything, be enamored with a new character.
I agree,
You know, you spend 30, 40 hours with a smaller pool and you plug people into that over time, over the course of maybe years at this point. But I guess we'll wait and see. At the minute, we know quite a bit in terms of the demo and the amount of time that we've had on with it, and we're all pretty positive, aren't we?
Oh, definitely. I loved the time I had playing with it. I was not excited for it. I was nervous about it. I was anxious about them doing it. Within 3 hours of playing the game, that was all gone. I cannot wait for it coming out now.
Sweet. So yes, you can all come find us on social media. You can also use the hashtag WCGP to leave some questions and thoughts and bits and bobs, and we'll get around to them in the coming weeks. For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've got no breath left, but I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you for having me.
And Adam Cleary.
Hello.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.